Welcome to Pond Lehocky, the largest workers' compensation law firm in Pennsylvania. With over 250 years of combined courtroom experience, we've helped over 100,000 injured and disabled workers obtain benefits, as well as some of the biggest settlements in the state. Even better, Pond Lehocky doesn't charge a dime until you win. If you've been injured at work, give Pond Lehocky a call.
First chartered in 1903, Steamfitters Local 420 has been constructing and installing mechanical systems throughout the Delaware Valley for over a century. United by excellence, this local is proud to have worked on projects such as the Sun Oil Refineries, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and the stadiums for all our Philly teams. From helmets to hard hats, Local 420 represents the history of Philadelphia. Steamfitters Local 420, Jim Snell, Business Manager.
Welcome in, everyone, to another edition of The Labor Show with J-Doc and Krause as we roll along here in the month of November, J-Doc. Big one-hour show today, and I don't necessarily know if in 60 minutes of The Labor Show you can cover the ground or cover the territory of our very, very special guest who has been an incredible individual for the city of Philadelphia.
Well, you know, great point, Joe, and it's great to be back here at FOP5, and we just did the McClef special here. But it is our pleasure to bring in John McNesby, President, Fraternal Order of Police, obviously Lodge 5. John, how are you, sir?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to be here. I think we normally have you on the radio, and so it's great to be face to face in the really beautiful Union Hall that you have here. You know, we have a lot to talk about. First of all, I want to start off by saying, you know, congratulations on just an incredible career. You know, here at FOP5. We're going to talk about everything that's going on right now, but I want to thank you, obviously, for what you've done for our police officers over the years.
Well, I appreciate it. We have, you know, it's just, I mean, I get the credit, but it's a team effort, and it really is a good team we have here. So it's going to continue to move forward, and we're going to do the right things, and they'll have the support of me for whatever they need. And you know, we're not going to skin our knees here. We're going to move forward and make sure the cops, the men and women on the street are taken care of and make sure that they're represented correctly.
Well, you know, it's certainly, we talk about leadership all the time in our labor community. And it certainly starts at the top, and your reputation, we're going to get into a lot. You know, you're a major advocate, obviously, for our officers. And having said that, What do you attribute your success and in a sense, you know, your popularity with your members? What do you attribute that to?
Well, I mean, I came in and I wanted to surround myself with a lot of people that had experience here. My father was a longtime Union FOP Lodge 5 member, but and on the board also. But I brought people like Bob Hurst, who was retired, and Rich Costello, and I was able to learn off of them, and what I didn't know, I would run by them, and experience counts. I mean, you know, one missed, you know, stroke of the pen or a pencil, and you could really mess up the members' futures, livelihoods, pensions, benefits. So bringing them guys on and learning from them and what I didn't know and running things by them and slowly learn and move forward. You're not going to jump in this seat and know what you're doing for the first at least 2 to 3 years. Once you do that, you get a feel of things, and you're able to move forward. You're forging relationships with, you know, city administration and different people, some good, some bad, and you get a feel for that. And you get some people on your team that you know are going to move forward that are street cops. We're representing, you know, everything we do is for the officer on the street, and we have to bring people in that have their finger on the pulse out there, that know what's going on, that know exactly, you know, the problems, the complaints, the issues. So I think we did a pretty good job of that, you know, through the years, and I think the people on the street were happy. We've done a number of contracts I've negotiated and worked out, went to arbitration for at least six of them, where we've gained over 55% pay increases, maintained the best medical in the country. I mean, where else can you go and you don't pay a dime for anything? I think cops are happy with that. And I look at the way you have an officer, say, with 30 years. The first 10 years, they're worried about money in their pocket. How much can they make? The second 10 years is all about family, medical. They're starting to get married, have children, so they're worried about that. And then the last part is pensions. Pensions drop, and you know what their future is going to look like when they leave the job. So I think we've done a pretty good job explaining that, moving it forward. You know, building this building was a monster.
Your legacy. I first thing I thought of when we parked today, I thought as I'm walking in here, okay, obviously your legacy is vast, but this building is a big part of it.
Yeah, I mean, we were down at Broad and Spring Garden, wonderful spot, but we outgrew it. And we had to make a decision early on of whether we were going to stand still there and suffocate, or we move forward and make this into a model building and for not only around the country but for around the world. The FBI Academy comes in here, and they bring people from all over the world, and they're like, they couldn't believe what we do here. The staff that we have, we put 120 people to work, part-time, full-time, just in the catering end. I mean, it's a humongous operation. I never thought it was going to be that big, taking it over.
Well, it's amazing because I remember with the Ironworkers Hall, same with my father. Learning the catering, for crying out loud, so that you can negotiate a good deal.
Right, right.
Like, I mean, you, there are a lot of things, but those operations bring in revenues for the members.
Exactly. I mean, we're making money to for other programs that we have here, sports programs, community programs. You know, we have a lot of requests through the community that we help out. But, you know, coming up here and then finding a spot and then, you know, I remember signing a mountain of documents. And then we had to move forward and had to be all – we had guys saying, well, I'm a roofer and I'm this. I said, well, it's got to be a union. It's a union building we're building. We have to have a union.
Right.
Union people doing work.
Right.
I said, you can't – you know, we can't because you're –
you're in the right – this is union row, basically.
Yeah, you guys do a roofing on the side don't mean I'm going to have you do a half a million job.
Right.
It just doesn't work that
way. Well, you know, you said something really, really interesting in surrounding yourself with good people. Remember Richie Costello and you know – you know, by the way, John, you would come, you know, with Philly Labor, we've had our organization for a long time. You remember you came and spoke to a lot of our,
yes.
A lot of our union leaders and a lot of our vendors. It's funny when you get when there's a legacy, you have somebody like Richie there, and then you come in, you know, and you want to take it to the next level. But you said something really interesting, and that is not to be afraid to surround yourself with good people and ask questions.
Right.
You know, there's nothing, even I remember, I mean, just in any business, in any situation, asking people and not being afraid to do that, and because there's a lot of different facets, right, you know, to what you're doing. Having said that, obviously, so your final day is going to be, what, next Friday?
Yes.
Okay, so we got him in the nick of time, Krause.
right after a big win over Dallas.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
That was a huge win. A beautiful day for football yesterday.
Oh, my God. And so,
John, let me ask you this, just in terms of tenure, as you laid out that 10 and 10 and 10, so you laid out, it visually triggered a thought in my mind where perhaps for some of the officers, you know, the final 10 over the last 7 years have been more challenging. So,
absolutely.
And it triggered a thought in my mind of this ebb and flow of up and down. And sometimes when the arrow's pointing down, the pressure that shifts to you as the CEO of running this,
right,
is a completely different dynamic. Talk about that.
So the last few years, I mean, you could just pick up the newspapers and, you know, read, you know, whether you like to inquire or not. I particularly don't, but and I don't know whether that's good to say here, but
no,
feel free. You know, you look at things and you look at the protests, and it seems like everybody's finger pointing to the police. And, you know, I get it, but it's not, you know, we're out there protecting the community. We're doing our job with less resources. We have people leaving the department left and right. It's a different generation now. It's hard to sell this profession to the younger guys and girls out there. But, you know, we've done our jobs through 2020, 21, 22, through COVID. You know, we're the only city, we had a leader here, or lack of a leader here, in a police commissioner who literally shut down and stayed in her house, you know, for the whole length of COVID.
Well, one of my biggest complaints during, you know, everything that was going on downtown when we were getting, when Center City was being ravaged down there, was we were on we had a curfew. We had to be in at 6 while our Center City was getting burnt down.
Right.
And so there was, we've talked about it many times. Now, our mayor has been good with our construction and our labor unions, but when it came to that particular situation, which is not, which is right at the top, it was a cluster. Okay, yeah. it was a screw up, and leadership is what we didn't have during that time.
Well, you can't have. You're right, and you can't react. You have to be proactive. You can't react. You're reacting to the press. You're reacting to the print press. You have to go out and do your job. You were elected to lead, and we're out there ready to go to work, and you're shutting everything down, and you're pointing the fingers at the police, and we were the problem. No, it was the people that were running the streets, and that's not normal, man. I mean, you got to take control of that. You got to stop it. And I think the guy we have in there now is going to do a good job at that. Hopefully, they consider him for the full time job. But when you're out there doing things, you can't shut a city down for 3 years and not recruit people. Now we're behind like 1,800 police officers, and it's going to take forever to catch up if we can.
Well, also 911 operators. There's.
Is that bizarre? You call 911 and nobody answers?
John, let me tell you what happened. I said it on one of the broadcasts. I wouldn't believe it if it didn't happen to me.
Really?
I'm driving up Henry Avenue, going to a broadcast first thing in the morning. I forget what day of the week it was, but it was like a Thursday. It's about 9 o'clock, 9:30. I got to get. I'm going up to Plymouth. And I pull around, I'm driving around the bend, and all of a sudden I see a tree on fire. It's right up against an apartment building, right up there, like Ridge on, right before Andorra. So I immediately pull right over. I call. The 911 dispatcher with the police answered. He said, "No, I got you. Now, I know where the fire department is. I live in East Falls. It's 5 minutes away." He tried to get the fire dispatcher on. There was nobody there.
Wow.
And I could tell he was embarrassed. He's going, "Oh, they must be on their way." I'm like, and I was, cool. But I mean, turns out, obviously, the actual homeowner or the apartment owner was able to put the fire out. But I didn't know if it was coming out the window. But that was a great example of exaggerating.
Today, one of the most trying times in somebody's life is when they're dialing 911. It's an emergency. And you're relaying the information to whoever's on that phone. And they're going to relay it to the officer on the street. But there's no officers on the street. So, you stay in roll call, you look to your left and right, especially on day work because everybody's in court and there's nobody there. So when you're calling 911 on a priority, you ain't getting a cop for maybe an hour and a half in some situations, if that. So.
That brings up a ton of thoughts that I'm thinking. But before we get into that, because your job touches on a lot of things, and when you took the job, in 2007, 24/7, is not an exaggeration,
right.
But also amongst all negotiations, all the departments, dealing with your own department, dealing with the city, dealing with the DA's office, dealing with the media, dealing with the community. Okay. Could you even have imagined in a sense, especially if you have standards like you do, could you have imagined that phone is going to ring in the middle of the night in a constant basis?
Right. Well, nobody's calling at 3 o'clock in the morning to say hello.
Right.
So, you're married to your phone, and my phone has not been shut off, for the last 17 years. And I'm not complaining because that's what I signed up for. You could take this job, sit in a chair and not do a damn thing, and,
right.
Get along, go along to get along. And that ain't going to work because our cops are very, they're going to hold you accountable. And if you want to do the job right, you have to have a good team. And, we were so successful that we started even another area where people want us to come talk to their members. So we're going around helping contracts around the world, around the country, helping, in advisory roles on what they need to do, contracts.
But it's interesting, like you said, though, and that's why I brought up with your standards, because you can coach anybody, and it's going to be an extensive, but if they don't, if there's leader, it depends on the leadership and the standards of the person. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, I know you're conscious.
I'm here every morning by 7:30, And I sometimes leave by 7:30 on the early days. So, I mean, to put the time in, and, you know, it's a good job. It's a trying job. It's a stressful job. But if you surround yourself with people, you do, and you do a good job, you know, we can get you're going to have the ability to get things done for the officers and keep the community safe. But you got to keep your finger on the pulse everywhere, whether it's the contracts, whether it's city administration, whether it's city council, whether it's in Harrisburg, Washington. So, you know, you got to look at these different things. It's just not sitting down and not doing anything every day. It's you need to look and see where you can better your membership, and I think we've done that.
John, do you find yourself when you are planning your next day wondering what uncertainty will surface tomorrow when I wake up?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, we have a great, a schedule put together, something can pop up at any time. And you know, I remember probably the most trying day was a couple years ago, and I had just come back, flown in, got here in the afternoon, and then it was a report of an officer shot, then a second, third, fourth, fifth. And we didn't know what we had, and that was the job down in North Philly. And, you know, it's things like that that pop up. And, you know, a week after taking the job, the weekend, Chuck Cassidy, great guy, great family man, good people. His family I've got to know. I've really was invited to their weddings. It's things you don't – people you meet that you don't want to ever have to meet. Yet you do, and you make sure that they're taken care of. That was a couple days after I took office. And then we started to lose officer after officer after officer. And it's a constant, you know, you hope it doesn't happen, and you say to yourself, it's not a matter of when, it, you know, if it happens again, it's a matter of when.
You know, I try and explain, just the other day, driving my daughter back to Drexel, driving down Broad, and she's 22 years old now, and I tried to explain to Isabel how under siege it is, or it must be, to be a member of the police department. And I still think today, and perhaps maybe more today, John, than even before when you started, it's even more and more difficult to do it.
Absolutely. We have a great police department. They're well-trained. We have the best staff that are in the academy. But the sooner you make a decision, you have a split second out there to make a decision.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, thousands of Monday morning quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So they want to tell you what you did wrong. Or they'll pick, you know, and slice a piece together that shows you not in a good light.
Yeah.
When really, you've done your job, you've done it correctly. And, you know, if you hear the whole story, then you're going to get listen, I always say if you tell somebody a part of a story, you're going to only get part of representation. So I need to know the whole story, and I need to know it, and I need to know the truth. And then we'll see what we got, and then we'll deal with it. But you can't go out there and expect our officers to do their job, and then you don't have the backing of the administration. Whether you're right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, people make mistakes sometimes. And I'm not saying our guys 80, 90% of the time are doing the right thing. You might have that one small group that, sure, you could discipline or you could talk to or train differently, but you got to give them the tools to do their job, and you have to make sure that you back them.
I'm going to just on that, but I want to talk about Maureen Faulkner, who we did a benefit at Finnegan's Wake years and years ago. And we had this conversation because we did the McClef event the other night, okay? And, you know, one of the it's staggering, just one situation, but dealing with, I just we came through the building there and I saw all the pictures, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, we did the event at Finnegan's Wake, and it was called Artists for Daniel Faulkner. So we had musicians from all over the country. And I got to know her pretty well. But I thought to myself, as we were doing the event, what is she going to say? What is she going to say? Because it happened a long time before that.
Right.
And I thought to myself, you know, I wonder if she, you know, if she has a speech that she'd... And she started off immediately talking about her husband and talking about her husband, Danny Faulkner, who was killed in the line of duty, but what it's like to look at his pillow when she goes to sleep at night. Now, immediately, I was a mess, okay? Immediately, she puts you in the real life and dealing with that on a regular basis. And Maureen says of you, John, and I got this out of one of the articles, that no one understands when you're the president of the FOP all the time, the effort you have to put into taking care of people. Because you're somebody that when something goes down, okay, you know, the family's going right to you. Right. And having that, the wherewithal to be able to handle that, by the way, in the middle of the night, maybe, who knows, maybe right. maybe you didn't sleep for 2 days because you got a cold. But do you think people understand, A, that, number one, and number two, do you think, you know, the media, you know, regular, the general public, understand what police officers go through, having to make that, having to make that split decision right there with a gun pointing right at them?
No, I don't think so at all. I really don't. I mean, I just did an endorsement. We have, you know, one of the biggest things we do here is endorsement of our public officials who are going to back the police. And I sat in this room here, in the conference room, and I listened to a gentleman who was running for city council. And, you know, I don't know where his thoughts were, but, I mean, thank God he wasn't even in a running. But he talked about, you know, when you guys have somebody, you know, pointing a gun at you or threatening you, why don't you just shoot them in the leg or in the arm? I mean, this isn't the wild, wild west where you can just wing a guy and move on. You're out there, and split decision.
Absolutely.
In a second or two, and you know, you're Monday morning quarterback and what they do. So our guys, sometimes, you know, listen, I always say policing isn't pretty. It's not a pretty profession, and sometimes you have to take action, and sometimes it doesn't look well. But, you know, your main job is to go home at night to your family and do it. You also have to balance protecting the community and respecting their rights, too. And I think we do a good job of that. And some of these latest cases that you see in the media, you know, are going to be, we're confident that they're going to be, the officers did their jobs. And, you know, let the chips fall where they may, but we're going to stand behind them 100% because they did what they were supposed to do.
The Labor Show with J-Doc and Krause and our very special guest, John McNesby. We'll take a short break. Back in a moment. Hey, everyone. This is Krause of Saturday Night Live with Philly Labor, proudly presented by Jim Stevenson of Chapman Ford on the Boulevard. Buying your next car online is just a call, click, or email away. Let Jim Stevenson handle your union family's next purchase right from the convenience of your home. Email Jim right now at jstevenson@chapmanautogroup.com. Remember, if you're a member of the building trades, contact Jim Stevenson at 215-698-7000, option number 6. If your union is a member of the AFL-CIO, contact Jim Stevenson at 215-698-7000. Buy your next vehicle or lease your fleet right now online from the only man in Philadelphia that has supported every union effort with unconditional effort. Jim Stevenson of Chapman Ford on the Boulevard says, union yes. Get the Stevenson difference. He supports and drives the union community.
This is Wendell Young, president of UFCW Local 1776.
We proudly represent nearly 35,000 members who serve their communities at meatpacking and food processing plants, nursing homes, manufacturing plants, grocery stores, our fine wine and good spirits stores, and in the medical cannabis industry, among others. Our members earn fair wages and good benefits. We give workers a voice in their workplace. To learn more about our union, please visit UFCW1776.org.
And back here on the Labor Show with J-Doc and Krause. Fascinating conversation today. Tough one to have in many ways because the CEO, the leader of the FOP, is stepping aside after 19 years.
17.
After 17 years. And, you know, so many thoughts run through through your mind when you listen to John McNesby, when you see him in a press conference, when you see him being
advocating
quoted,
advocating on behalf of his members who otherwise, you know, would not have, you know, it's we talk about representation. Now, John, you have, you know, you've been criticized for it, but, you know, by the media,
right,
that you lay down so, you're so hard for your officers, right? I can only imagine what it was like. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about you know, your successor, but
John, I got to ask you one thing, J Doc, before you jump into segment
you
two.
You just said one, so there's only going to be one. I'm joking.
Did you know at the time that you were going to need to, or it was going to be required of you, to, no matter how difficult the situation was, to continue to move forward? It's easy to say, not very easy to do based on the circumstance.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a number of things that pop up, you know, especially in this job. If you do it right, you're going to work hard. And you're going to demand things from your staff that, you know, may not have been done before. So I think that I pride myself on the people, again, that we surround ourselves with, and doing what's right by the cop. So the last, you know, we talked about the last few years. You have body cameras now. You have the media. You have everybody with their with social media and their phones.
Everybody's a reporter.
Everybody's an expert. But they have no idea, you know, what they're doing. We had an officer who was involved in an incident just a couple days ago where we had people jumping on his back, and he was off duty and helping another uniformed officer who was in trouble. And they're saying he can't touch anybody because he's not in uniform. I mean, where do you get that stuff at? I mean, but that's what we're going up against. Everybody out there is an expert, a self-proclaimed reporter, and but, you know, we continue to do what we need to do. And you know, that's my job, to take the hits for representing the officers. And listen, people say we represent everybody. That's not the case. So if somebody's, you know, out there doing things that, you know, we had an officer the other day that was like 20, 30 some sexual assault cases against him, and we haven't represented that guy in years. So,
yeah.
So that's, you know, we're not, you know, they pick and choose what they want to report.
How important is communication? And when I say communication, I'm talking about what your members, obviously,
right,
the community, the media, the Philadelphia Police Department. How important is that in your world?
Very important. I mean, we make sure our members are notified on every incident that we have. We have, you know, the normal things, the websites, the text blasts, the email alerts. I started a program when I came on to have a personal phone call to each member twice a year. So you have 7,000 cops. So we call each one on their cell phone or their, hey, what's the problem? I want to know what's going on. If there's an issue and you don't think we're doing something, I want to know about it. But on the other hand, if we're doing something good that you like, I want to know about it. So just that personal phone call to them, and you may only reach 60-70%, but that word spreads. Hey, I got a call from the FOP today, and they, you know, they just to see what's going on. And we have people at the districts, the roll calls, the units, to make sure that we're here and what's good. If you don't stay in touch, there's no sense being here. So that's, you know, that's something that I wanted to do from the beginning.
Now, we obviously have a new mayoral, a new mayor coming in.
Right.
There's a mayoral election tomorrow. This is going to air on Saturday, so by the time this show airs,
right,
we're going to have a new mayor elect. What advice and what are your hopes for that mayor in regards to public safety? Because every one of their platforms, every one of them, is, you know, it's about, you know, keeping our city safe.
Public safety was the number one, like you just said, Joe, for this mayoral election. So if you need to understand that people won't come here or stay here if they don't feel safe. You can't walk the streets at night without worrying about being robbed or shot. You can't go to a gas station without being carjacked. That whole mindset has to stop. And to do that, we need more police, number one. You need to back your police. You know, the mayor now, you know, was great when he started out, but I don't, you know, in the last couple of years, it seemed like he entered a shell. And, you know, there's
to me, it was at the social justice. Soon, you know, when the next day, and I get it, it was a traumatic situation, but we needed leadership there during, more than ever, because, like I said, we were home on lockdown, and our city was being, you know, ransacked.
Engage the issue, engage the community. And you know, when we have incidents that are out there and we have to unfortunately take, you know, action where it critically hurts somebody or unfortunately kills them, you're apologizing to the people on the street rather than checking on your officer to see how they're doing. Nobody goes to work in this profession to kill somebody.
No.
They don't leave for work to say, hey, I'm going to take somebody's life today. That's not the case.
I imagine also that it's relatively, we're all human beings. All human beings. I have no idea, although I've had a gun pointed at me one time in my one direct time when I was younger, and I remember telling my buddy, hit the gas, okay, at Broad and Locust. But my point is, I was in the nightclub business for a long time, and I knew a lot of so we had to beat cops. We would and the respect I had for those men and women, you know, when because we had some incidents outside, there was no way we could, and they're running towards the issues, okay, and so you don't know how somebody's going to react when they're in harm's way, okay. I can tell you last night coming home from the game, with somebody coming up 20th Street and a car comes in front of us, goes straight. Another guy's beeping real hard, goes right in front of him. Next thing you know, he jumps out of the car. We back up. I said to my wife, we're out of here. My point is, that's a panic situation. How do you train somebody, a human being, these aren't robots, to be able to say, okay, here's what it's going to be like when somebody's actually, not just pointing a gun, actually shooting at you. I mean, I you could give me all the books in the world, and yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do until it actually happens.
Yeah, that's why we have a great staff, training people. We're constantly looking to see what we can do to move forward, to learn more about it. You know, there's always more information coming out, research coming out, stuff, incidents that happen around the country where we can learn off of. And I think our guys and girls out there do that. It clicks in, they're training. They don't even think twice when they're doing something. I mean, you got something like that. They're running towards danger, like you said, and most people are running away. So,
John, why is it, do you think, I don't know the answer to this, why is it that the general public, we're part of the general public. We don't share in the belief, but we're part of it. We'll criticize when it doesn't affect their world, but immediately have a need of respect for law enforcement when it reaches their front door.
Exactly. I mean, the whole defund the police,
it was ridiculous.
You know, that whole platform a couple of years back. Now, those same people, when crime is hitting them, I talked to a state rep the other day who was carjacked, and she says, I never realized, how much we need the police until something like that happens to them. And the police did the right thing. They wind up getting her car back. But people don't understand the need for police until they, actually... And when you're calling for the police, that's, like I said earlier, it's one of the most traumatic times of your life.
Oh.
And you don't know what's going on. You're scared. You're nervous. And we're here to represent the community and take care, represent you, and make sure that you're safe and protect you and your family. Yet you're the first one to strike a match at us when something goes wrong.
John, that responsibility, and no question, by the way, I believe the majority of the folks and the families out there weren't the ones that were speaking the loudest, they were a minority. And mm-hmm. I think you know the people, right. in a lot of families and neighborhoods that are socioeconomically challenged.
Yeah, but some of
they need the police more than anybody.
But some of that narrative, J.R.
Oh, you got the media jumps on that narrative also.
Saying, some of
that's
that narrative
the media,
created
that's the
that.
Social media, that's the Facebook, that's the Twitter, that's the different ones where they can put something up. We had whenever you have an incident, everybody has to rush to post and put out bad information. They want to be first to do that.
John, you represent the police, though. Like, when as a general public, we... When we're in trouble or something's happening, okay. First, obviously, 911, got to call the police. Talk about that responsibility. The men and women who, now when they're in need, you are the, that's why I could only imagine. I know we're going to talk about Roosevelt, your successor, in a minute. And I know you would have said some great things, and I know he's going to do a great job. But I can imagine if I was a police officer watching your success record, and not just a record of success, but some, you're not just going to push a police a man or woman, you're not just going to come in and abuse them. I don't care who you are. They come to you. What type of responsibility is that?
It's huge. I mean, it's huge. And I want to make sure that my main thing coming in here was I don't want to hear somebody say that something can't be done, because if you're saying that, you're not going to work for me. We have to make sure that we're able to get things done that nobody else has gotten done, and we've done that. You know, one of the main things cops, when we heard about residency, they wanted to move outside the area of Philadelphia like every other normal citizen, and we were able to get that done. And people were saying, you know, how'd you do that? We did our homework, and we did it right. But when you call the FOP, I want somebody talking to you on the phone. I don't want to hear, I'll call you back, or you don't get an answer. I want everybody to have an answer. We work for the members on the street. They don't work for us. So communication is key. And I come in every day to about 80 to 120 emails, which takes forever to get through.
Oh, yeah.
Phone calls, complaints, and first thing I do every Monday morning, that's why I was late here, is to have a staff meeting to make sure that we know what's going on for the week. Bang, you do this, you do this. I want to know what happened here on the weekend. We had an officer who was injured. We follow up with them injuries. We have 4 or 5 injuries a day.
No doubt.
So we want to reach out. We want to make sure they're getting the care that they need. And there's a lot of moving parts here that people don't see. You know, we don't just come in and sit down and watch, TV in the morning. We're out there doing what we need to do. We want to make sure that we're connected. That's key.
Let me ask you about the dark side. There's a dark side, a tough side, a mentally challenging side,
PTSD side,
to being a police officer, and I think when you reach the point of absorbing so much that you've had to see and experience, you reach a point where it becomes so difficult, I think, for many of these officers.
Right.
It's an untold story.
Listen, and I'm glad that you brought that up. We have a record number of suicides in this profession. Just this year, a record number. And that's not something you want to lead the league in. And we have a number of programs that we started here. But you never know the success rate. You only know the failure rate. And that's crazy.
Well, we did the show from a cleft, and we had the officer that was here whose son-in-law committed suicide. Now, he out of an East Falls, he lived 200 yards from me, okay? And it was really ironic that we had his father-in-law on the show, but...
Yeah, and Joe, you don't know whether you're winning or losing that game because you only know the people that actually do it. We could have saved 20 times more. We had a guy participated just a few months back or a couple months back in a suicide bike ride, and he winded up committing suicide the next week.
And I think about I've thought about it a lot, the PTSD and officers. And what do you do? Okay, what do you do? First of all, my next door neighbor is a cop. Okay, he's hurt. His knee is it third or fourth time getting it, from on the job running and doing... and a better guy you're not going to meet. But I've often thought when it comes to PTSD, I mean, how do you handle a situation where you're driving down the street and you have no idea who loves you or who is like, what's that like? You're driving a car. Okay, we're not driving a car that's not marked. It's a marked car. You can see. And so you're trying to protect people, and at the same time, you could be. I can't think of a. I can't. There's two situations that I've thought of in my life that I think are got to be the. Just on a daily basis, pulling somebody over, a normal traffic stop, and a domestic violence situation. Okay.
Well, you just said normal traffic stop. None of that's normal.
Right.
You don't know what you're walking into.
You don't know what you're walking into.
Right.
I mean, so And you know, you talk about I was in the AOH and was it young Danny Boyle? And it was first day, it was first or second day on the job, and he pulled somebody up and talking to his father, and so those PTSD situations, you know, I mean, you can't even imagine. Like, you don't know who's on the edge as a human being, and who's not.
And we've started programs for that. We've started our alcoholism, our divorce rate is higher than normal professions. We have groups that are transitioning back into the police department from active duty military service who may have been, you know, overseas or out of the country for a year. We have a group for shooters that are involved in police-involved shootings where they meet. So they meet in this room, you know, once a week, once every couple weeks. We have an alcohol group that, you know, comes in, and it's well attended from people. It started and expanded and spidered out so big that we have groups from now. They come in from Jersey and Delaware. So there's a lot of good things that we're doing here that we don't advertise, and that's not what we're about. We're just about helping the officer. And if, you know, it changes one or two people that for the good, that's great.
Your successor, Roosevelt. Tell us a little bit about him and Roosevelt Poplar. We had the pleasure to meet him.
Yeah,
good and guy. You said you're going to be here. You know,
I'll be helping him out. And I'm, like, my phone's on, still be on to help him. But he's been by my side for the last 21 years. We work together well. He's my chief of staff. He knows just as much as I do about anything that goes on here. We'll be helping him walk through the contracts. And again, I think we won't miss a beat with him at the quarterback position. I think he's learned a lot, and I think we've learned a lot together. We were here from the beginning, you know, building this building. He was a key part of that, and, you know, not at the top, but he's my right-hand guy. He takes the hits just like I take them, and I think that he's going to step into the role really good.
Okay, go ahead, John.
Let me take a quick break, our final break here of the Labor Show with J-Doc and Krause. He's sitting in and visiting for the full hour of the Labor Show today with John Nesby. We'll take a short break. We'll pick it up on the other side. Back in a moment.
Navigating group Medicare health plans can be overwhelming. Our friends at Labor First, a division of Retiree First, work with plan sponsors to design and manage Medicare plans for union retirees, keeping costs low without compromising member experience. Retirees can keep their retirement stress-free by calling a dedicated advocate who will guide them through their health plans and answer their questions. Preserve the health benefits that retirees deserve at RetireeFirst.com.
Consider a career with the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. As a Boilermaker apprentice, you'll earn while you learn. We offer excellent wages and benefits. And as part of our no-cost, hands-on apprenticeship program, you'll learn from the best in state-of-the-art training centers and on the job. Become a union Boilermaker and get on your way to a great career.
Visit Boilermakers.org or call 844-IBB-WELD.
I'm back here on the Labor Show with J-Doc and Krause as we visit for the full hour today, J-Doc, with John McNesby. And as you ask questions and John provides answers, and I sit as a member of the listening audience, and I try and use theater, the mind, to translate what we're talking about or what John is saying today and put it into real perspective. Sometimes, John, it's easy for me to visualize and understand what it means to be you. And then other times, it's a complete fog. It's a complete challenge for me to try and understand that. Is it the same for you?
Sometimes, you know, this isn't really we're forced into situations sometimes where we don't know exactly the road or the way it's going to go, but, you know, we navigate that way and try and get to the other end of the tunnel. But then there's other things that we know that, you know, what we're walking into and how we go, and we have a plan before we do it. So it's just about calling audibles. It's about keeping the ball in the air. And it's about, at the end of the day, making sure our guys and girls are safe out there and taken care of. But there's a lot of things, you know, I can go into a number of different things that happen here on a daily basis that we – you know, some things we don't even realize.
Thinking on your feet.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, one of the things.
Well, here's my point. Here's where I was going with this question, Jed. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I have short-term memory loss, so I'm going to forget my. Okay.
Sometimes you're forced to stand at a podium or stand in front of stand in front of television cameras and be an SOB. And that's part of the process.
Right.
That's part of the job.
Yeah. And, you know, there's things that, and listen, we don't go out there searching microphones. We don't go out there and look for things. But when at times, you know, when we're ready to go, we're gonna fire with all barrels. We're going to do, you know, when I'm coming out representing an officer, I'm going to make sure they know they're represented. And to that, you know, there's some of the things that are unpopular. Like we had the media and everybody got a big, you know, to do about me screaming and yelling about protesters on an officer's lawn. Well, you want to protest? That's fine. Protest. Knock yourself out. Don't do it at an officer's house on his lawn, yelling, things to his wife and his two daughters. Because I'm not going to stand for that.
Well, you know what's interesting about that, John? In a sense, you know, you go out there and I can't think of another analogy, so I apologize. But you take the bullet for that, so that member knows that you're right in it with them. You know what's also interesting about that? You know, when you're in that type of turmoil, when you're in a firestorm of media, okay, what is admirable about what you've done is you've gone out there and came at it from the hip. In other words, you know, you don't have time. Look, you're a real dude, man. And so, having said that, not being afraid to go out there and tell people what you think. At least they know where you're coming from. And so, I think that's very important, because if you didn't have, you had somebody out there skating, okay, trying to, you know, please the media, okay. Now you got a member who, in many cases, did the right thing, but, it's not popular to do the right thing if you're a police officer today, if it has anything to do with force. I'm sure that's the last thing somebody wants to do. But you go out there and you jump into that firestorm with them so they know they're not alone. How much does that mean to the officers?
It means a lot. It just, because right now, or during this time, during the last 3-4 years, we were the only ones speaking for them. Nobody else was. We had a commissioner locked in our house. We, you know, the mayor was disengaged, and anything that he came out and said was against us. But, you know, we had to do something to make sure that we were able to tell our side of the story. And whether it's, you know, going to that location and engaging the people that are there, or having a counter protest on that person's lawn. If you want to do that, we'll do that. Or screaming into a microphone anywhere we can against the attacks on our officers. So, you know, a lot of that, you know, we don't look forward to doing, but if we have to do it, we'll do it. That's a last resort. And I'm willing to pick up a phone and speak to anybody. If you want to protest, knock yourself out downtown. Do it wherever. Cotman and Frankfurt, that's fine. Don't do it in an officer's house.
I watched, we've been doing a labor show for 10 years. And one of the things, and I've watched my father, and we had, the way our union ran, with the ironworkers, since I'll never forget the first union meeting I went to, I'm 18 years old. It was 1982. I never seen anybody say anything to my dad, right? I mean, we on our floor, you know, guys are yelling and all this. And I came to my dad, I'm like, what was that about? He goes, that's the way we do it, right? But sometimes, and by the way, I'm sure you've been in situations where you had to break bad news too, mm-hmm, to the members. Sometimes if it's a negotiation and times aren't good, sometimes you got to tell them the way it is. But one of the things that I've always said to labor leaders, just by watching it, is if the members knows you care about them, it's about them and it's and not about you.
Right.
It's not about image. Okay, they'll follow you into through the gates of hell. Okay, and that's an important part of that equation. You know, you're willing to, you know, you're supporting them. Sometimes you got to tell them the way it is.
Right. So let's look at it. The only thing a good leader needs is followers. And, you know, I just talked about this the other day when you had our commissioner that wasn't around. And
right. She didn't do a press.
She would address a problem on Monday that happened on Saturday, and the looting and so forth. So when we had the interim commissioner, John Stanford, leading from the front out there with the officers. That means a lot. You know, when you have all this looting and he pulls up on the scene and says, boom, starts directing, grab him, get him. This ain't going to take place, you know. If somebody puts their hands on you, you have the right to defend yourself. That's the message that these guys and girls want to hear. They don't want to hear, you know, about an investigation or he shouldn't have used, you know, that the tear gas incident on that was directed by the higher-ups, and this poor guy out there that was doing his job is left holding a bag. And, you know, he's going to be fine. He'll be back to work. But, you know, why would
he have the stress on his family and
family and everything. And that's the things that we have to address, and we have to make sure that those families are taken
care of. Especially if you want to recruit more cops and, you know, if you want people protecting
us. Have you figured out in that example, have you figured out the answer to the question why?
I think it all directs back to the generation, to the media, to the social media, to them reacting to the press. You know, be proactive. You know, listen, you're elected to do a job. Do it. If you don't like it, leave. And that's, you know, some of the things that are lacking today in some of our politicians. They're too much, you know, they're too worried about appeasing people rather than doing the right thing. Follow your gut, man.
We talked about your successor, Roosevelt Poplar. Okay, sitting here, John, and you know, knowing you and knowing, you know, your track record and your, you know, your diligence and committing character seems to be the number one number one trait that obviously our FOP leader has to have. What I love, and this is important because I've seen this up front, what I love about, you know, the way this is going to transition is a lot of times it goes, you know, goes out for a vote. You get the most popular guy, right? And that guy might be a popular guy, but he may not be the most, he might not be the one suited to lead that union. Mm-hmm. Okay. And in a sense, how that relates to you is developing character, developing our leadership here.
Right.
Okay. Talk about that and the importance of having a successor that, you know, has the experience and has that character to be able to lead like you led.
Right. Well, this decision wasn't made in the last month. This decision was made years ago about who, you know, that's the most important thing you want to do is pick a guy and then make sure that they're ready for this position at any minute, you know. So this has been going. This is a work in progress. And I think that people realized, you know, from the day one that he was my right-hand guy, that he was going to be the one. He's my chief of staff. Something needed to be done. If I'm out of town, he's pulling the trigger. And I gave him the support to do that, whether you're right, wrong, or indifferent. Pull that trigger and do what you need to do to get it done. And if, you know, we screw something up, then we'll fix it. But, you know, whether it's male, female, black, white, it doesn't matter to me, man. You do the job. He was a great cop. He's a great union leader. And he's going to fit in this role like nobody else.
John, do you hope or have any thoughts on what you would want people to say about John McNesby when he's not in the room?
Yeah, good thought. And it kind of breaks you up a little bit. But the families, those who got, you know, lost their life.
Labor Show with J-Doc and Krause as we visit with John McNesby. Just a couple of minutes left, J-Doc. I know we didn't get anywhere close to your long layout of Q&A for John McNesby, but I will say this. When you have a 17-year tenure, and I think I could make this statement, 17 years in John McNesby's world is a lifetime. So many.
Well, I would say this. As first of all, John, I want to thank you for your service.
Thank you.
You stand up for those people who stand up for the rest of us. And many, many cases, it's the reason why they have the guts to do it, especially in today's world. And so, and I'm looking at, you know, you talk about what John, in John's position, you're negotiating for wages, benefits, retirees' benefits, officers' issues, non-monetary, negotiation, safety, all those things, not to mention investigating situations that happen on a daily basis with thousands and thousands of officers that are out there. I just want to, you know, we're going to end it on this. I mean, just want to thank you so much, you know, for your legacy, okay, for what you've done, okay, because it affects us. You know, those people that are out on the street there have one line of defense, even if they do their job right. Okay, and that's you, and that's this office right here. And so your legacy is going to live on forever, and we look forward to obviously, you know, meeting Roosevelt officially and seeing what he does, you know, in your footsteps, because, you know, the city's in good shape there. So we want to thank you.
Thank you.
As we obviously exit the program, you've been great to me over the years. I mean, you've been, you know, you came up and spoke to all, you know, all our people. You've been great to our unions.
I'll still be around. So just pick up the phone and, you know, wherever you guys need me and, you know, as long as my schedule permits, but I look forward to still being involved. We'll still be, you know, giving advice, and I'll just be taking on a different role and seeing what that leads to.
Absolutely.
We'll get John McNesby to give us the last word here as we wrap it up on the Labor Show with J-Doc and Krause. And John, I'll ask you for the last word, in this context. In 17 years, you have changed the lives of so many people that you'll never know by your actions with your members and everyone else.
I'm proud of that, because there's a lot, like when I made this announcement a few weeks back, I didn't realize some of my staunch enemies are, you know, saying, sorry to see you go, you know, you did a hell of a lot. So that means a lot, you know, people coming out of, you know, out of the woodwork actually and giving support not only to me but to Roosevelt Poplar, to the rest of the team, to the FOP, not only police and their families, but also politicians, people that you know, people that we've been to war with, people that we've had controversy with, or at least they knew that, you know, we were known to be above board, and that I had the label of a straight shooter. If I wasn't coming to your side, I would come right at you, and that's what I'm proud of.
First chartered in 1903, Steamfitters Local 420 has been constructing and installing mechanical systems throughout the Delaware Valley for over a century. United by excellence, this local is proud to have worked on projects such as the Sun Oil Refineries, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and the stadiums for all our Philly teams. From helmets to hard hats, Local 420 represents the history of Philadelphia. Steamfitters Local 420, Jim Snell, Business Manager.
Ironworkers Local 401 members are highly skilled. Ironworkers Local 401 members are highly trained. Ironworkers Local 401 members execute jobs that require structural steel, concrete structures, towers, and the highest part of a building you can see that is currently under construction. Ironworkers Local 401, a proud member of the Philadelphia Building Trades. Say thanks to a member of Ironworkers Local 401, Kevin Boyle, Business Manager.
This is Wendell Young, president of UFCW Local 1776.
We proudly represent nearly 35,000 members who serve their communities at meatpacking and food processing plants, nursing homes, manufacturing plants, grocery stores, our fine wine and good spirits stores, and in the medical cannabis industry, among others. Our members earn fair wages and good benefits. We give workers a voice in their workplace. To learn more about our union, please visit UFCW1776.org.
Consider a career with the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers. As a Boilermaker apprentice, you'll earn while you learn. We offer excellent wages and benefits. And as part of our no-cost, hands-on apprenticeship program, you'll learn from the best in state-of-the-art training centers and on the job. Become a union Boilermaker and get on your way to a great career.
Visit Boilermakers.org or call 844-IBB-WELD.